And can you give us an idea of what, because I think this is a term that we hear a lot now, the traditional mm-hmm. American diet.
Yeah.
And, okay, if I'm eating in America, I'm eating an American diet is sort of one way to think about it. What is sort of that diet look like mm-hmm. that we're talking about isn't doing us any favors? And how can we start to move it towards a more sustainable midline?
Yeah. So that's a very good question. Mm-hmm. So I think of it, the standard American diet, like abbreviated as SAD. It's the SAD diet. It really is. There's a reason for that acronym. Yeah.
Welcome to the Healing Ground Movement, a podcast dedicated to revolutionizing how we think about our bodies and our health. I'm your host, Dr. Carly Hudson, DC, and I have lived my life in pursuit of holistic healing and care that goes beyond symptom management. If you've been listening and like what you're hearing, head over to your favorite platform and leave us a review so we can reach more people with our important message. Enjoy today's episode.
Welcome to another episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Carly Hudson, and with me today we have Miranda Meyer. Miranda, I'm excited to interview as part of our Diving Deep into Functional Nutrition. She's worked closely with some of our other podcast guests as well, with Dr. Van Winkle, so we'll probably have a lot of crossover and conversation there. But to get to know Miranda a little bit better, she's a functional nutritionist and founder of Food for Thought Nutrition Therapy. She is certified in nutrition therapy as well as functional blood chemistry analysis. Miranda specializes in chronic digestive issues and autoimmune conditions and is passionate about educating and empowering her clients to take control of their health, which is definitely a theme we see here. We want people to do better and know better.
Yeah.
So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me.
So we always like to start with the same question, and that is to ask, when was movement first fun for you?
Movement? Mm-hmm. I would say probably pretty early on. Like, I started mm-hmm. getting into gymnastics in preschool, so mm-hmm. probably age, like, 3 to 4. And that was really my first memory as far as, like, movement being a real fun thing. I mean, in that age, you're kind of indestructible, so.
That's true.
Or you think you are.
That's actually a better point.
Yeah.
Yeah, you think you are. So what was fun about gymnastics for you? What were your favorite parts that you remember?
I think just seeing what my body was capable of. So mm-hmm. just being able to be like upside down and like being able to do all the different movements. And we had a lot of great coaches like at the preschool that I went to. So
that's
did
awesome.
That for several years. That was probably my first really positive memory with movement.
Did you continue doing movement or sports or play throughout your adolescence?
I did. So I didn't do a lot of organized sports. I grew up on Kauai, so very, mm-hmm. very small island, and access to certain things there was limited,
mm-hmm.
But definitely always very active, like a lot of outdoorsy, hiking, swimming, things of that nature, mm-hmm. and then in Colorado, obviously, that has continued on.
Yeah, you've really kind of been in places that foster that movement just for fun and play for getting through your environment.
Absolutely, and that's super important to me. I'm actually going through a certification program right now for mm-hmm. personal training because I'd like to incorporate more movement with my clients and into mm-hmm. my practice. So
awesome. Well, I want to dovetail back around to that after we get chatting a little bit to talk about where movement and nutrition meet and how they can support each other. But for now, as a nutritionist, mm-hmm. can you tell us what inspired you to pursue that and how you help your clients?
Yeah. So what initially inspired the transition into this career field was actually my own experience. So mm-hmm. it was my early 20s, so I was probably around 23, and just feeling really tired, really run down, like sleeping for 12 hours at a time and just thinking like, this isn't normal. Mm-hmm. I've had digestive issues since I was a real little kid, like as long as I could remember. And I actually started working with a naturopathic doctor and a nutritionist mm-hmm. around that time and discovered that I had what looked like celiac, like a pretty severe intolerance or sensitivity to gluten, some other food sensitivities, some nutrient deficiencies, and just started noticing the benefits personally,
mm-hmm.
going through some changes. And I was actually on track to go to grad school at USC for occupational therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But found that I was much more interested in researching nutrition. So I completely switched gears, moved back to Denver, started a 2-year program here for holistic nutrition, and then have been in the field for about 8 years now.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
I love how so often the times, especially when it comes to being a helper of some sort or a care provider, that it really turns into what do you want to obsess about learning for your own enjoyment?
Yeah.
And then being able to turn that into a career, into nutrition is mm-hmm. fantastic.
Yeah, 100%.
Wonderful. Okay, so what is your specific take on nutrition then? Because there are certainly a lot of different types of nutritionists mm-hmm. and being certified or not certified, and the idea that you do work with blood chemistry mm-hmm. as well. Can you paint us a picture about what you do specifically for your clients?
Yeah, so I would say kind of, I guess what sets me apart and the reason I call it functional mm-hmm. nutrition, you'll actually see, I've seen that term pop up a little bit more here.
Yeah.
But it's really a combination approach. And I think, obviously, food is foundational. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I find is often missed when people have been to, like, nutritionists or, like, MDs or naturopaths, you name it, is mm-hmm. the absorption piece.
Hmm.
So I look a lot at not only the food that they're eating and the supplements that they're taking, but how well are they absorbing those nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a lot of work, and I try to specialize in, like, chronic digestive and chronic gut issues. So I think that the absorption piece is really key, because you're not really, like, just what you eat, you're what you absorb.
That's a really good distinction, and
yeah.
I think that that's a frustration that we hear often mm-hmm. is I'm eating the right diet or I'm taking the right supplements, but these symptoms just aren't clearing up.
Yeah.
And that gets down to that really basic level of, are you even taking it in? Is your body able to use it?
Yeah.
So how do you identify absorption issues?
There's actually a lot of different ways to identify mm-hmm. that. So, like, A, looking at symptoms. So if people are having, like, chronic digestive symptoms, like, I know, like, if they're having, you know, chronic constipation or diarrhea, like, mm-hmm. there's a motility issue. So it changes, like, the rate at which things move through, like, the stomach down to the small intestine, colon, et cetera. And it does impact how they absorb nutrients in the small intestine, like, mm-hmm. how quickly or slowly things are moving through there. So I definitely look at symptoms. And then, obviously, looking at diet, like, the mm-hmm. standard American diet, like, you know right off the bat, looking at a food journal or a food log that people are deficient in certain nutrients, just looking at their food intake. And then I also utilize the testing piece. So mm-hmm. looking at general blood work, like if they have combinations of like low iron, low vitamin D, low magnesium, low total proteins, there are various markers that you can see on blood work that are also very indicative of poor digestion or malabsorption. Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that you brought up blood work, because this is something we were chatting about a yeah. little bit before before we started talking, is that there are a couple of different ways that we can look at blood work, mm-hmm. that we have some of the more traditional blood and lipid, so your cholesterol panels yeah. and things like that, that are done when you go get your yearly checkup.
Mm-hmm.
But what you test for and what you look at is a little bit different than making sure that your LDL and your HDL are in normal levels and, you know, on you go.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So I utilize something called functional ranges, and that's mm-hmm. something that you see very commonly in functional medicine. And basically, like, the distinction between a laboratory range and a functional range is the lab ranges are basically an average of everyone who's coming into that lab to get their blood drawn, and they basically create a bell curve and say, if you fall between here and here, mm-hmm. you're normal. But unfortunately, that leaves a very wide range. And usually once people are falling, like kind of those outliers, they're mm-hmm. very symptomatic at that point. So I utilize what's called a functional range. So it's a much more narrow scope.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where people function optimally and feel the best. So that's really the way that I interpret blood work. So it's mm-hmm. a little bit different than an MD. And sometimes I do look at different markers and or larger panels, because the other thing with functional approaches to blood work is you look for patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not just looking at, oh, you know, your LDL is high, you need to do X, Y, and Z dietary changes, and, you know, that'll come down eventually, hopefully.
Yeah.
It's like, well, why is it high? Can we look at other inflammatory markers? Is there something that's driving that up? Like, what are liver enzymes looking at? Is your mm-hmm. recycling mechanism working? So interpreting it in a functional way is really looking at the whole picture, so you mm-hmm. can bring all the pieces of the puzzle together.
So in a sense, you're almost looking at some of these markers like LDL, for example,
yeah.
that often in traditional MD we're seeing that is an indicator of a symptom like high blood pressure or mm-hmm. Things of that nature. For you, the LDL itself is a symptom,
yeah.
is the why is the LDL high? And that could be because we're not processing things or we're in chronic inflammation.
Yes.
And we can bring that down by digging even deeper.
Yeah.
Sounds like quite a rabbit hole to get lost
in. It is. It can be a lot, but it's yeah. also kind of fun being mm-hmm. able to, like, you know, because you start to be able to see these little nuances and see mm-hmm. how things tend to fit together. And that's really cool to be able to bring that together for a client and say, like, hey, this is why you can't bring your cholesterol down, or this mm-hmm. is why you're feeling this way, or this is the reason for that symptom because mm-hmm. this entire system is off. So.
Well, and that kind of cuts us some breaks too, because mm-hmm. I know that very often often there's a complaint when it comes to, and we'll just keep hammering away at LDL because it's such a common one that people hear about, that if I am doing all the dietary things I need to do and I'm exercising, and frankly, I am just bending over backwards with lifestyle changes and my LDL just cannot, will not move. Mm-hmm. Now I can say it's genetics and it's just not happening for me, and that's just too bad. When the fact of the matter is that if you take the time to work with someone who knows and can follow that rabbit hole, the changes necessary can start to become a little bit more effortless because you're putting all of your energy into the right areas.
Yeah, 100%. And again, I think that's where it's very useful to be able to bring the pieces of the puzzle together. Because when you compartmentalize things too much, you miss things. Mm-hmm. Like the thyroid is not separate from the digestive system, is not separate from the immune system, is not separate from like liver function and cholesterol numbers. Like it's all part of one big picture. And that's where like a whole body holistic, like functional approach, I think is really advantageous for people.
Well, and all of these words are becoming such buzzwords because I think there's a real change happening in healthcare.
Oh, yeah.
Where as we have pieced things out into specialties before, we're really starting to realize that, like you just said, we can't look at things in isolation. And certainly, you know, when we talk about thyroid and digestive systems and even your hormonal systems, they all influence each other and it will change that snapshot that you get in your blood work day to day, depending on what you're looking at.
Oh, yeah.
Now, before we kind of go down that rabbit hole, I did want to circle back around to you because you made an interesting point that was kind of news to me, and that is that the labs will give those normal ranges based on the average of the people that they see. So those aren't being set by some, you know, research standards overall.
No, I mean, and there's some of that that does go into it, but if you look at like Quest versus LabCorp versus another lab, the ranges are different.
Interesting.
And that's because part of that is based off of like a population and they, like I said, they basically create an average and that's kind of like their normal standard ranges. And that's why there is some deviation between different labs. There's no 100% set ranges even for like a normal medical lab range, which is really I find really interesting.
When I was in school, we certainly learned that these are the ranges. And I never thought to question, well, where do the ranges come from and why do we have those? What population was it being studied from?
Sure.
So on the one hand, it's kind of nice to think that the ranges are going to be based on the population that you are part of. But if you're being called normal, in the most recent statistic that I read was that about 45% of Americans have a chronic disease. And so if their blood work is creating the normal bell curve, you have to be in, like you said, in really bad shape to fall off that curve.
Yeah.
And I think that's something, another theme that we keep returning to is that average is not normal, is not healthy, is not asymptomatic. And in this case, the blood work can really kind of give you the wrong impression.
Oh, absolutely. And like I tell clients all the time, I'm like, just because it's common doesn't make it normal. Like this is not how you're supposed to feel. This is not how your body is supposed to function. But unfortunately, like it's so commonplace in our society that people just kind of learn to deal with it. They learn to live with it. So
yeah, chronic headaches, fatigue, anxiety, that's everybody's got that.
Oh yeah, 100%. You just drink more coffee and power through.
We got
until
this.
You can't.
Yeah. Well, and that gets into the conversation of going and getting your blood work taken just for the sake of seeing what are your basics, you know, your red blood cells where they need to be and your cholesterol and your white blood cells. And so you can go have these done and without a functional lens on them, you can be told you're perfectly normal and yet still miserable.
Yes.
And so diving deeper into how the systems layer on top of each other becomes a really important aspect.
I totally agree. And it's interesting, too, because there's it seems like a very black and white interpretation with lab ranges. A lot of the times, like I'll have, for example, this was a few months ago, I had a patient come in or a client come in and her ferritin levels, which is like your iron storage marker and very commonly a cause for like chronic fatigue and irregular menstrual cycles, headaches. You know, there were a lot of symptoms she was presenting with. And she came in and the lab cutoff was 15 for ferritin. So anything below 15, she would have been anemic. And she was at 16. And nobody said anything. They're like, well, you're normal. I'm like, right, but this range goes all the way up to like 150.
Yeah.
So the fact that you were 1 point above and you have all the symptoms of low iron – and you give her iron, she felt fantastic. Like, mm-hmm. again, there's like those little nuances where you're paying attention. If they're too low or too high or too close to that end of that range, they're already mm-hmm. pretty symptomatic.
Exactly. That you don't have to wait to cross that line right. in order to suddenly have headaches.
Sure.
I had the same thing happen to me when I was pregnant, is that I was having headaches, I was mm-hmm. having fatigue, and everything that I ate tasted like metal. And that, when you have low iron, that's a pretty solid low iron when you start to have your taste buds start to change.
Yeah.
And I went and I had my blood work tested, and I was actually 2 points above their cutoff. Mm-hmm. And so they're fine. And I took it upon myself starting a lot more red meat. I wasn't going to supplement while I was pregnant sure. with iron. That gets a little tricky. But initially then, all of those symptoms went away. My energy went up and food started tasting good again. And so when you start to look at that hard cutoff that you have to step off the cliff to start feeling like crud, that's just not the way our bodies work. We work on a gradient scale.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And again, that's like taking things with a grain of salt and being able to look like, okay, you're close to kind of like that cutoff and you're also symptomatic. Mm-hmm. And then you have some other markers that are showing me that you're not absorbing other nutrients. So again, it's being able mm-hmm. to take all those little pieces of the puzzle and just put them together.
Looks like a duck, walks like a duck.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's really starting to treat everybody individually mm-hmm. because the idea of saying that you need to have a certain level of iron and that 15 cutoff mm-hmm. is to say, I expect you to behave like the average person. And again, this is sort of running off that we know now that blood work is about average, not normal. And it's not acknowledging that for whatever reason, this client of yours needed a little bit more iron.
Yeah.
And for whatever it was that she was processing, what she's doing in her daily life, she needs more. Mm-hmm. And to treat her as the individual she is really behoove of getting people out of the pain and discomfort that they're in.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are some of the ways that you treat when you look at functional nutrition? What can someone expect now we've done these blood panels, mm-hmm. we're looking for nuances within our ranges. Mm-hmm. What comes after that?
So first and foremost, education. That's really mm-hmm. important to me. And I think it's very important for clients to kind of understand why we're doing what we're doing mm-hmm. and ultimately to be able to kind of take over the reins, like as we go through the program mm-hmm. for them to know kind of like, oh, if I'm feeling this symptom, it might be because of mm-hmm. this food or like this cause or this environmental factor. So education is definitely the first piece. And then typically I will put people on some sort of either whole foods or elimination diet to discover food sensitivities. I do utilize certain supplements and nutrients, oftentimes temporarily. I look mm-hmm. at them as kind of a way to reboot physiology, if you will, kind of like fill in the gaps, heal certain systems, make mm-hmm. sure they're absorbing foods properly. So those are usually kind of the first steps that we're looking at, is just some general dietary cleanup, maybe eliminating some foods to look for sensitivities, mm-hmm. And then using supplements to kind of fill in the gaps and kind of reboot as needed. And then oftentimes I will recommend certain specialty labs, like sometimes, you know, if there's an infection suspected, mm-hmm. you can look at stool panels, there are viral panels. So those are utilized with a number of my clients. And then looking at follow-up blood work, I think is important as well, because it's mm-hmm. great to be able to pair symptomology, so looking at how their symptoms have improved over the course of a few weeks, mm-hmm. and then being able to double check the labs as well and saying, hey, great, like your iron levels have come up, your vitamin D is now within the normal range, like your A1C has come down, your blood sugar markers are looking much better. Mm-hmm. So,
and you can start to put that whole picture together of yes. making their normal panels and where their mm-hmm. ranges need to be asymptomatic and feeling good,
yeah.
to be healthy, rather than kind of a shot in the dark.
Yes.
Well, and I love you talking about nutritional supplements kind of as a reboot, mm-hmm. that I think something that needs to be better understood about supplements, and even when we talk about these ideas of amino acids, the parts of proteins, mm-hmm. minerals, vitamins, these are all important to our system because they are tiny little puzzle pieces that help things function better. They give our cells energy, or they mm-hmm. move blood, or they help us store things where they belong. And if we don't have the raw material to do it, then there's a general breakdown within the system.
Yes.
And sometimes what we need is just a very large delivery of magnesium or a very large delivery of vitamin D, mm-hmm. so that rate limiting step can start to move on, mm-hmm. rather than depending on, okay, well, I'm just going to eat more eggs because it has vitamin D and get out in the sun. Well, over the long term that could work because we are getting more vitamin D. But in the meantime, you're still feeling sluggish. You're still, you know, one step forward, two steps back instead of playing a huge catch-up game. I feel like that was a long walk for a short drink of water.
But yeah. No, I totally agree. And oftentimes, I mean, and that's oftentimes the way I'll phrase things when mm-hmm. people ask, hey, you know, do I have to take supplements or why do I need them? Mm-hmm. I don't use supplements with every single individual. I'll usually use one or two with mm-hmm. most people, sometimes more depending on the level that they're at. But, you know, again, with like the vitamin D, for example, I mm-hmm. could get your vitamin D up in 6 weeks or it could take 6 months to a year. Like, what would you prefer there?
Yeah.
So, again, you know, that whole like that idea of rebooting, mm-hmm. like supporting physiology, and supplements are meant to do just that. They're meant to supplement a healthy diet. Like that's mm-hmm. always the foundation, is what you're putting in your body, how you're moving your body, what's in your environment, mm-hmm. and then you can utilize the supplements just to support.
And that also comes with the caveat of having a healthy diet.
Yes, so absolutely.
So if we want to get off supplements and stick with the traditional American fast food diet, we're probably going to still be nutrient deficient.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And again, it's coming back to that absorption piece. Like if you're eating the standard American diet, which is highly inflammatory, it's mm-hmm. not conducive to digestive wellness. It alters the microbial balance, aka like the healthy versus the unhealthy bacteria in your mm-hmm. gut that interplay with every single system. They boost your immune system. They produce your neurotransmitters. They help to absorb your nutrients. They produce fat-soluble vitamins. If you're eating a diet that's not conducive to digestive wellness, like you could be taking all the supplements in the world, mm-hmm. but A, like it's not a replacement for food, and B, you're probably not absorbing them. Mm-hmm. So it's basically like expensive pee is what I call it, just running right through you. Like mm-hmm. they're doing you no good if you're not also looking at like the digestion, absorption, dietary factors as well.
And can you give us an idea of what, because I think this is a term that we hear a lot now, the traditional mm-hmm. American diet.
Yeah.
And okay, if I'm eating in America, I'm eating an American diet. It's sort of That's one way true. To think about it. What is sort of that diet look like mm-hmm. that we're talking about isn't doing us any favors, and how can we start to move it towards a more sustainable midline?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. Mm-hmm. So I think of it, the standard American diet, like abbreviated as SAD. It's the SAD diet. It Aww. Really is. There's a reason for that acronym. Yeah. But in my opinion, and in just in observation mm-hmm. with clients, like what I define that as is basically just like a heavily processed diet. So okay. most of us are hitting like, you know, Starbucks or a coffee shop in the morning. We might have a shake or a bar or like fast food. A lot of people are eating out for lunch. We're mm-hmm. eating things out of like, you know, frozen meals, cans, boxes, things like that. Vending machines in the workplace. And then for dinner, oftentimes people come home and they're exhausted or they haven't prepped. So again, it's going to be something like fast food, ordering a mm-hmm. pizza, takeout. So it's just really a lot of processed food. It's a lot of things that come out mm-hmm. of boxes, bags, cans, freezer. And I think the number one thing people can do is start eating whole single ingredient foods and cooking more at home. Like you have total control there. Mm-hmm. And that eliminates already so many of the processed ingredients, so many added sugars, so many chemical preservatives. And it just gives you a little bit more control over what you're putting in your body. Because you never know kind of what's being added at a restaurant or
where it's coming from.
Exactly.
I love that you opened that up to boxes, bags, cans, and packages. Mm-hmm. And so, because I think so often we think that, well, I'm not getting my food through a drive-through window all the time.
Yeah.
So I'm fine. You know, that's the traditional, that's the SAD diet. Mm-hmm. But you're right that when something is made and put into one of those containers, it also has to live in one of those containers longer than anything that's shelf stable.
Yes.
So if I have an apple on my counter, if I haven't eaten it by the end of the week, and you know, I give it to my chickens because mm-hmm. there's nothing been injected into that apple to make it stay put.
Yes.
And those are the pieces that you're talking about that give us that gut dysbiosis and mm-hmm. cause these inflammatories are what are the chemicals that make that food, and I'll say kind of cheeky, safe, quote unquote, safe to eat for long periods of time versus I think I heard another great instruction was, you know, eating the whole foods and cooking at home. Mm-hmm. If you can cook a meal with 3 to 5 ingredients plus spices.
Yes.
And that is a good, well-rounded meal. without preservatives.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And like, you're just like, you're eliminating so many different things there. You're eliminating the preservatives, the chemicals, mm-hmm. artificial sweeteners. You're eliminating all of the refined sugars because mm-hmm. it's amazing the amount of products that contain sugar. Like, you can flip over like a package of bacon. You're like, why does my bacon have sugar in it? Like,
this should just be pork.
Yeah, exactly. You would think so. Like, pork and salt. Like, mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just an easy way to kind of control that and to cut down on a lot of those things that do cause inflammation. And like you said, dysbiosis or, mm-hmm. you know, an alteration of the bacterial balance in your gut, and can help with weight loss, you know, type 2 diabetes, which is epidemic now. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I think that's a good challenge that you just mentioned about what's on the back. Mm-hmm. Is anything that you think is whole food that you like to eat at home, like bacon, it's really just got to be salt and pork. Mm-hmm. Flip it over and see if there are more than two ingredients to it. Because I suppose that, you know, if your package really does just say pork, or if you're eating, you know, some dairy product and it mm-hmm. just says milk, then, yeah, that's a one-ingredient thing. But there's going to be a lot of chemical words that are pretty long following that to help it be shelf-stable or sweet. And the sweeteners can hide under, oh, my goodness, I once printed out a list of other words for sweeteners.
Yeah.
And it was two columns long.
Yep.
The full size of the page and stuff that you wouldn't even imagine, including words like natural flavors.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All of the names for sugar. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of terms like natural flavors or like spice it. They're not regulated. Mm-hmm. You don't know what those mean. And like the term natural in and of itself is not regulated. Mm-hmm. It's a very creative marketing term and it makes the food look good. But I mean, really, at the end of the day, it doesn't mean anything.
That's true. So if there's a name on your package that isn't a piece of food as you know it and could go pick it up on the outside aisles of your grocery store.
Yes.
Then it's not a regulated term and, you know, you don't really know what you're consuming.
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. And I actually do grocery store tours with clients. Ooh. And that's usually, I mean, that's the number one thing as we go around the perimeter. I'm like, this is where you start. First and foremost, the vast majority of your food should be coming from the produce aisle, mm-hmm. from like the meat counter, like just fresh, single ingredient, whole mm-hmm. foods that you prepare at home.
And so when you're doing those kind of simple changes of preparing food at home, what kind of immediate impact do you see in your clients?
Typically, energy levels go up. Mm. That's one of the first things that people cite is they're like, wow, like I'm not getting like that mid-afternoon crash where I would normally go like reach for a candy bar, a cup of coffee, something to boost me up. I'm sleeping more restfully, like I'm falling asleep a little bit easier, or I'm staying asleep throughout the night. Brain fog is another huge one that you start to see a shift in mm-hmm. relatively quickly when people change up their diets, where they just say, hey, like I feel like I can think clearly, like I'm not losing my words. Like I just feel like that mental clarity piece shift. So I would say those are kind of the biggest. And then digestive symptoms, like definitely, you know, things like heartburn, gas and bloating, like chronic diarrhea or constipation. Oftentimes those things will start to shift in a mm-hmm. relatively quick fashion as well, which is really neat to see.
That's cool. And the thing that strikes me about that list is that just about everything on it. Now, maybe people don't talk about their bathroom habits quite as openly as we do here on the podcast, but it's very important. Talk to your friends. But that everything that you bring up is normal.
Yeah.
It's normal to have brain fog and need to have my 3 o'clock coffee.
Yep.
And maybe because I had that 3 o'clock coffee, it's normal for me not to fall asleep or wake up in the middle of night. These are all water cooler complaints that everyone is going to have.
Yes.
But yet we all have them because we're all eating a sad diet.
Absolutely. And like, just to reiterate, just because it's common does not mean it's normal. Mm-hmm. I feel like we use those terms interchangeably, but to me, they don't mean the same thing.
Yeah. Common is not normal. Common is not healthy.
Yeah.
Especially when you start to look at just about any statistic about general health in the United States, there's a lot of cleanup that we can do.
Oh, absolutely.
So what does long-term success have to look like then?
I would say long-term success for my clients, I view it as, again, like putting like the reins in their hands, like mm-hmm. being able to educate them to the point where like they know what to eat, they know how different foods interact with their bodies. They know what food sensitivities they may be experiencing, what to avoid, what to emphasize. They know what supplements maybe they do well with long term. So really, I think it's like giving people the control back, mm-hmm. like putting control into their hands, and for them to be asymptomatic 90% of the time. Like, I would look at that as like a very high success rate, because mm-hmm. you're going to go on vacation. Like, you're going to, you know, have things that are out of, you're going to have holidays. Like, maybe you go to a party and drink alcohol and you don't feel so hot the next day. But 90% mm-hmm. of the time, you should feel really, really good. Like, if there's not something that you can make a direct connection, hey, I did, you know, X and Y happen, like,
Yeah.
There's always going to be those instances, but that would be success in my mind is you should, like 90%+ of the time, you should feel really good.
Well, and I think that's a really important part that, again, that culturally we are so black and white.
Yeah.
And so we have, you know, by and large as a population sort of accepted that, okay, all the time I feel a little brain foggy and tired and cruddy. Yeah. And now that I'm making this effort, now all the time I should feel perfect and fine.
Yes.
And that's just not the way really anything in nature works. There's this idea of homeostasis. Mm-hmm. There's this idea of coming back to a new average, a mm-hmm. healthy average, but knowing some days you're going to be like singing up high above that average because everything went according to plan. Best night of sleep. Your kids didn't wake you up. Your dog didn't wake you up. The food was exactly what you wanted to eat. You drank all your water. And some days you're going to slide a little bit below that average because of those holiday parties, because of stressors we don't get to plan for, movement that we don't get to plan for. Mm-hmm. But really, it's about raising that bar that you go above and below throughout, you know, throughout the course of your year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that you actually brought that up, just the concept of raising the bar, because mm-hmm. I talk about this a lot, like a threshold.
Yeah.
So basically, I mean, this you see this a lot, particularly I work frequently with the autoimmune population. So mm-hmm. people have things like celiac or Hashimoto's, MS, things of that nature, and they have a very low threshold where mm-hmm. basically there have been lifestyle, environmental, internal, genetic, all of these different factors that basically have lowered their threshold. And every time they breach that, they become symptomatic. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the goals, like with any sort of nutrition program that I implement, is like raising their threshold. So like having a foundational diet, lowering inflammation, addressing nutrient deficiencies, mm-hmm. like it basically it raises that bar higher and higher and higher. So again, like they may be like kind of hanging out at this level, mm-hmm. they're healthy 90% of the time, they're feeling really good, and then maybe they get dehydrated, and mm-hmm. then maybe they go on vacation and they eat some gluten, and then they had a family crisis. But it takes a lot to push them mm-hmm. over that threshold once you've gotten to that level of homeostasis where the body is self-regulating mm-hmm. and, you know, they're doing everything right to support that at least the majority of the time.
Yeah. And I think that gives you more room for quality of life.
Yeah.
Because when you talk about the threshold piece of it, you know, it could be that when your threshold is so low, then you have, you know, one cookie because it's your friend's birthday. Mm-hmm. And that cookie, you're paying for it for weeks because it flares up MS symptoms of inflammation, and now you can't walk and you've lost muscle control, versus having that higher threshold, that cookie isn't going to touch you.
Yeah.
That's not to say to eat five of them every day, but you can enjoy a quality of life without making you have to experience what has become so familiar.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it also gives people the control, you know, once you figured out what foods your body does and doesn't do well with, mm-hmm. You know the ones where you can get away with pushing it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I can have, you know, eggs a couple times a week, but I know if I eat them every day, like that's not a good food for my body. Mm-hmm. Whereas it may be something like gluten, I have one bite of that and I'm feeling terrible for the next week or two. Mm-hmm. Is that worth it to you? So yeah. Again, like it gives them that control, that education to make that informed choice going yeah. forward. Like, do I want to eat the gluten and have that cheat day that's mm-hmm. going to rack me for a week, or do I not? And do I want to find an alternative that tastes good and works well for my body? Mm-hmm. So that's a big thing too.
Well, and I think that's a really great piece about making informed decisions for yourself. Mm-hmm. That, and you know, often, and I kind of want to flip it around because, you know, so often we hear about gluten these days.
Yeah.
And I think people are starting to hear more and more about eggs being a problem. Mm-hmm. But I have someone I know that her problem is actually if she eats eggs, she's immediately going to feel symptomatic by an hour from then. Yeah. So for her to make an informed decision, living in the American culture of food, and she travels a lot for work, it's actually a better decision for her to eat a croissant than it is for her to grab an egg bite, because yeah. she'll be paying for that egg bite faster than if she eats a croissant. Then she knows she has, you know, 3 to 5 days to sort of drink a lot of water and make better informed decisions with her diet without having those symptoms come after her.
Yeah.
So, you know, you still get to make choices about living in your environment. We're not putting you in a plastic bubble, but you get to really personalize that mm-hmm. versus this really common story, because more often people have a higher gluten sensitivity
yeah.
to say, why on earth would you touch that? Now she has data to say exactly what she needs to do for her body, despite what, again, that normal looks like
yep.
or that common looks like.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. completely agree. And I think that's an important distinction, too. And, again, one of the reasons that I don't take more of a blanket approach with people mm-hmm. is because there's no one food that is bad for every person. Mm-hmm. It's just not a thing, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Everybody's very bio-individual, and your immune system may have been primed for whatever reason to go after eggs or soy, but not gluten or dairy, mm-hmm. which are the ones that are more commonly viewed as like the very insidious, like the bad foods.
Everybody should drop these.
Yeah. I mean, and not to say that they're not important to eliminate, especially mm-hmm. for like an autoimmune population, for example. Mm-hmm. But part of that, again, it's gathering data. It's figuring out, okay, let's eliminate these for a while, reduce inflammation, heal the gut, address some nutrient deficiencies. Mm-hmm. And then when we add these foods back in and we provoke your immune system, mm-hmm. how do you respond?
Yeah.
And not everybody responds the same way. And there are a lot of people that are like, I never thought eggs could be a problem. I didn't think I could be sensitive to tomatoes. Like, there are a lot of things that gets missed, and it's not always the gluten.
Mm-hmm. And it makes it really personal and then really mindful about what you want to eat and what choices that you want to make.
Yes.
Oh, I think that's fantastic. And just to have the end goal be to empower you to live the life you want at the quality that you want.
Yes.
Your threshold of what feels like good days to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful. So if you had a magic wand and could change one thing about the way we look at nutrition, I know it's a big question, change the way we look at nutrition mm-hmm. or the way we kind of take care of ourselves within this nutritional diet, what would that be?
Oh, man, that is a tough question. I would really have to say I would like to take away that viewpoint of things being totally black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And I think oftentimes that hinders people from making small changes that could make a big difference because they're mm-hmm. like, oh, I either have to go on Whole30 and do it perfectly for a month and not drink alcohol and not do caffeine and have none of these foods, or I failed and I'm just going to give up or I'm not going to do it. You see the same thing with New Year's resolutions or like mm-hmm. people going to the gym, for example. I know that's not dietary related per se,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, as you watch through January, like all of a sudden the gym was packed and then people fall off because they made unrealistic goals and mm-hmm. it was very black and white. I'm going to go every day or I'm not going to go at all. So I think giving people permission mm-hmm. to like make those small steady changes and just kind of taking away like that black and white way of looking mm-hmm. at like whether it's diet, nutrition or exercise, I think that would be a huge first step. Just, you know, be a little gentle with yourself.
I like that a lot. It's taking away that perfectionism.
Yeah.
And again, giving you the space to just raise the bar for yourself.
Yes.
And sometimes it can feel really unattainable to raise the bar so high that you have 100% healthy days, which mm-hmm. is frankly not attainable anyway.
Yeah.
The common cold is going to come around.
Yes.
The birthday is going to happen. The lack of sleep will get you. We can't be 100% all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've been spending most of your life down at like 20% of feeling good, and a surprising number of people will say, you know, they can't remember the last time they had a good day, then raising it to 40% is pretty good. Half the days of your week, 50% of the days of your week is a good place to start. And then
absolutely.
60, and then 70, and see what feels sustainable. Just expect that little bit more without perfection.
Yes. Yep. And I think that really takes away – again, the percentage of people that will fall off mm-hmm. of, you know, making healthy changes or whether it be like an exercise regimen or like, you know, an elimination diet or another nutritional program is just giving themselves space to be able to make like those small foundational changes and then build on that foundation.
Mm-hmm.
That's so important because people want to go 0 to 60. Like, we're primed to have immediate results and to want that quick fix and to mm-hmm. take the pill and to like experience immediate relief. And unfortunately, like when you're looking at the body as a whole and especially like a multitude of symptoms, things mm-hmm. just don't work that way. It's not black and white. It's not immediate. So there's no such thing as perfect, but the small changes do add up, and setting that foundation is really important.
Wonderful. Well, and so now we've brought up exercise a couple of times here. So tell us about this desire to add personal training into how you work with your clients as well.
Yeah, I've actually been thinking about it for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like obviously the two go hand in hand. And I think it's just very advantageous to be able to offer both, because a lot of times people do get frustrated where like, you know, they're told, hey, like, eat this, not that, like, make mm-hmm. these nutritional changes and then move your body. Okay, well, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you see a lot of people, especially people who have had chronic health issues or autoimmune, like they have joint pain, they have back pain. Some of them have had traumatic brain injuries or mm-hmm. concussions, and like their mobility may be limited. So I think being able to offer a little bit more tailored support and to be a little bit more hands-on, because there are limitations there as a nutritionist, I can't touch the clients.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like with a personal trainer, I can be a little bit more like, tailored, hands-on, just add another layer, add a little bit more depth to their course of care. So that's really where that that desire came from. Plus, I think it's fun.
And all the more reason to do it. I mean, yeah. Do things because they're fun.
Absolutely.
But you bring up another really good point, is that a lot of what we're told to take care of ourselves comes in these big vagaries. Mm-hmm. You know, we really took apart the standard American diet in this conversation. But what is healthy movement? And, of course, we have other episodes and other experts that we talk about that. But the fact that we have so much education on this now really serves to point out, in a sense, we really didn't know what we've been talking about. You know, eat better, move better. What's better? What's better for me as someone who has an active job versus better for someone who has a sedentary job and hasn't moved and worked out in years or a professional athlete? Better is such a personal tag. And that you need someone to take a look at you holistically, all the systems, all the bodies together, and say, this is better for you. Let's raise the bar just a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I love that term, like, that you touched on the term, like, what is better? And I tell people all the time, like, more is not always better. And it's very interesting, particularly with women, and when there's, like, a thyroid issue, hormonal imbalances, like, some of these deeper-seated imbalances going on in the body, overtraining becomes a huge issue. Where you can definitely, I mean, we're told to, like, do more cardio, eat less, work out more. And you see these people who are eating 1,000 calories a day and they're killing themselves at the gym, they're gaining weight. How's that possible? And a lot of it is, again, the dysregulation in hormones like insulin and estrogen and thyroid hormone, where, like, internally your body is telling you, store fat, store fat, store fat. So even though you're cutting calories and upping your workouts, you're not addressing the hormonal imbalances. And again, you can become nutrient deficient, which is going to further symptoms. And then you're exhausted trying to push you through your workouts. And you're, like, you know, cutting calories further. So it's just, it's very bio-individual. And again, like, more is not always better. When it comes to exercise, a lot of times when people cut back, they start to lose weight.
Well, and it's sort of that definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. We've kind of touched on this here and there, but could you, if it doesn't get, you know, too complicated, talk about why our hormones, particularly with women, because we do end up in these situations where we'll just be wrecking ourselves trying to lose weight, typically around that midline. And it doesn't go anywhere, no matter all of the right things, you know, quotations here, that we do, and then we do more of. Why doesn't that work?
That's a complex question. So I think I can kind of break it down here. There's a few different reasons for that and a few different mechanisms. I would say by far and large, like, one of the biggest reasons for, like, that stubborn fat around the midsection and when we're, like, eating less, working out more, killing ourselves, it's not going anywhere. A lot of times, yes, exactly. It's a problem. It's a blood sugar issue is what it really comes down to. Like, if we're eating, like, too many carbohydrates, not enough fat and protein to balance that out, basically what happens is this roller coaster effect where throughout the day, like, you're eating carbs, your blood sugar is spiking, and then it crashes, and you get dysregulation in other hormones in that system. You get spikes and crashes in your insulin levels, and when insulin spikes, it becomes a fat storage hormone. Every time your blood sugar drops from eating too many carbohydrates or too much sugar, cortisol kicks in, which is a stress hormone, and it also causes you to store fat, particularly around the midsection. So it's interesting, even if people are cutting calories, but they're still eating in a way that favors blood sugar dysregulation and dysregulation in insulin and cortisol, their hormones are literally telling them every single time they eat, not to burn it, to store it, and particularly around the midsection.
So you get into your body kind of gets into this scarcity sort of mindset. And then if you're stressing yourself by working out more and pushing more and pushing more, well, now you're telling your body that I have, and because your body, your hormones don't understand that you are choosing to be at the gym. You know, there's sort of this innate sense of, wow, whatever our lifestyle is right now, I can never stop running, and I don't know when the next time I'm going to get food. So I better hang on to this because we've got problems. And that becomes the ongoing success is what, at a very basic level, what story are you telling your body? Food is scarce and I have a lot of energy. I have a lot of demands on my body. Well, then I better store nuts for the winter. Or fat around my belly.
Absolutely. And I love that you touched on that, where your body and your brain really can't differentiate between what is causing the stress in the body. So your brain doesn't know if you're running from a tiger or if you're running on a treadmill. Like, the physiological response is the same, and it's going to increase the cortisol and those associated stress hormones. And we're learning more and more that a lot of things that we thought about exercise were wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're hearing a lot of this stuff coming out about like the HIIT workouts where like you push you back off. Like you're allowing those recovery periods. And a lot of people are experiencing like better energy, better gains in muscle, like better weight loss with workouts that are a little bit more varied and not just that chronic like push it cardio. Mm-hmm. Because you're allowing for that recovery. You're allowing for that reduction in cortisol. You're telling your brain like, hey, it's okay. Like, we're not still running. We're going to get food soon. We're going to be able to recover. So it just really changes the way that some of those hormones operate, which can be very advantageous.
I think that's wonderful. And it really does look at this level of, you know, humans as creatures. Mm-hmm. We don't spend a lot of our time doing high strenuous activity.
Yes.
Not a lot of animals do. We're really meant to sort of coast.
Yeah.
And then have the energy to burn and the way to push it when we need to push it, when the tiger is chasing us.
Yes.
Or there is an emergency that we need to get away from. And then kind of go back to coasting.
Yeah.
Because if we didn't coast some of the time, then, you know, we'd have to be so much bigger to process and manage all the energy that we need.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, that's literally what's happening is people are getting bigger trying to maintain their energy output.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more complicated than calories in, calories out.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I think that's the model that we've gotten very hung up on. And mm-hmm. it's really a disadvantage to people. There's a lot of misinformation and people are trying way too hard and getting way too few results.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like when you look at physiology and the way the body operates and the way it responds to these different hormones and like different types of workouts, it really starts to make sense and people start seeing results, which is really cool.
Well, I like that that's where nutrition and movement and medicine is kind of going these days.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started, you know, dipping my toe into it in my teenage years, it just so much of it did not make sense. Why do we have to work so hard and trick our bodies? Why is it so mysterious and such a crapshoot as to whether or not it's going to work for you?
Yeah.
You know, that you can diet and lose weight or exercise and lose weight, but you can't over there, so you just have to work harder. It was nonsensical to make it be so black and white
mm-hmm.
and leave so many people out of the success ring.
Yeah.
And now as we start to personalize it, we get to see while it's not black and white, and that certainly seems complicated and scary, it is a lot simpler
mm-hmm.
because when you do what you need to do to find all the pieces that are yours, the answer is simple.
Yeah.
And simple and easy, simple is not always easy, but it is more sustainable when you get to take it down to yourself.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And again, like it circles back just to that like empowerment, like empowering the person, educating mm-hmm. them, like putting in their hands so they know like what works for their bodies individually. Because there mm-hmm. are going to be some subtle nuances. Like there's no one diet, there's no one exercise regimen that's mm-hmm. going to be like across the board a fit for every single person.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that is part of the process, like being a little bit introspective and then having somebody to help coach you and guide you and like pointing out those little subtle connections or nuances.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really where people are successful long term because, again, all the pieces of the puzzle fit together and it works for them.
That's wonderful. Well, and so speaking of having someone to guide you, you do work through telecommunications. So
I do.
Anyone across the country could decide that they were looking for some guidance and help.
Yes.
How do our listeners find you?
They can find me on the website. So it's foodforthoughtnt.com. I do have a blog that's been started up on there, so trying to share like more recipes and just tips and tricks and some educational articles with people. They can book through the website, and I do offer free consultations. So we spend about like 20 to 30 minutes just kind of breaking down their symptoms, what they're struggling with, where they want to go ultimately, and just mm-hmm. making sure that they're a good fit, like making sure I feel like it's a case that I can take on, and then we kind of go through first steps from there.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I hope this has been a really fantastic resource for so many people. I know that a lot of the nutrition world and particularly that area of blood panels and I'm normal but hurting
mm-hmm.
is a really important thing to start to dissect. So I really appreciate your expertise on that.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
And we'll catch you next time for another episode of the Healing Ground Movement. The more you know. Done. Well,
cool.
Thank you. That was great.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. And really cool. I did not know that blood panels were based on.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard and got a little something out of it. Now remember, the information expressed in these interviews is for informational and not diagnostic or treatment purposes. However, I hope you find that having the right information and resources can go a long way to helping you on your healthcare journey. Ask the right questions and seek out professional help.